Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Well, here we are. We are halfway through December. Hanukkah starts this Tuesday. And I know we're getting close to Christmas, but I still find it difficult to get excited when the decorations around Atlanta have been up since Halloween. Okay? I think the way it's going, they're going to be up right after Labor Day, then the 4th of July, then, you know, Valentine's Day, New Year's, who knows. There is one holiday tradition, however, that never starts too early for me, and this may surprise you, and that is the arrival of the Salvation Army. You know, these are the people in the gray and the red uniforms. They stand at the entrance of every mall, every grocery store, every liquor store. Talk about smart marketing, guilt, money, you know, it's really great. You know, and they just smile, and they stand next to a big red bucket, and they ring a bell. As a former altar boy, that always makes me nervous, but, you know, they do that. But still, I can't help putting a dollar or more in the slot, put a five in at the liquor store yesterday, by the way, especially when the person who is ringing the bell looks like a kindly old grandmother or grandfather they just sent over from Central Casting. I think they picked those people on purpose. But for some reason, I never get the feeling with those people as I walk in that I get when I'm trapped in traffic and somebody's walking down the row of cars with a Santa hat and a coffee can asking me to contribute. You know, I don't like that. But the men and the women of the Salvation Army are always friendly, always courteous. They're never pushy or annoying, or at least that's the way they've always been with me. And in spite of what their name implies, none of them have ever tried to save me, convert me, or preach to me. They just smile and say thank you. They're very, very nice. Anyway, a few years ago, because someone asked me, and I didn't know the answer, I think they asked me, what religion is Salvation Army? And, you know, I like to think I know everything, so I had to look it up. Anyway, so I Googled the Salvation Army. And I want to share with you a little what I found, because I thought it was interesting. I learned that it was founded in 1865, around the time of the American Civil War, in London, by a Methodist minister whose name was William Booth. And he believed very, very strongly that the church, the Methodist church at the time that came from John Wesley, should be doing their work, instead of these grand cathedrals, should be doing their work on the streets and in the slums where they were needed. So his first converts, as he went out into the street, were gamblers, drunks, prostitutes, and thieves, the people that the decent churches didn't want. Which is actually kind of funny, because that's kind of the way this teaching started, the New Thought teachings in the United States, with recovering alcoholics, divorcees, gays, and people of color who were seeking spiritual growth and wisdom who were not accepted in the traditional churches. That was the first group of people that really got into these New Thought teachings. Now, the Salvation Army's primary goal is to approach social problems with what they call Christian concern. And as its name suggests, it has a military structure. All the ministers are officers. They have rank, captain, lieutenant, major, whatever it happens to be. The members are all called soldiers. The top leader in London could be a man or woman, it varies, is called the general. So it's military. When someone joins, they sign what they call the Articles of War, which are their Articles of Faith. And even though I don't agree with some of their politics, especially regarding gay rights, HRC, and that stuff, I do admire their discipline when practicing their faith. Because they don't just work during the holiday seasons, that's when we see them, but they also work throughout the year helping people who need help. So they work as volunteers throughout the year in prisons, senior centers, summer camps, rehab centers for drugs and alcohol, and in mental institutions. And even though they are indeed a very Bible-oriented Christian organization, instead of stressing formal religion, they emphasize two things. They emphasize compassion and the power of music. and the power of music. Remember the movie Guys and Dolls? Anybody? 1955. I know you saw it in reruns. None of you were around in 1955, you know. Frank Sinatra, Marlon Brando, and they were the gamblers and the hustlers who were being converted or tried to by the Salvation Army group. I had a crush on Jean Simmons, a woman in uniform, you know. Oh, my God. She was so hot, you know. I didn't know she was hot. I was only 5 years old at the time. But anyway, that was all right. Now, that's why you see these and hear these big brass bands with tambourines and tubas playing Christmas music. And even though the music may not always be good, they are always very enthusiastic. Now, once again, politics aside, I admire the fact that these people are striving to make a positive difference in the world. And even though they have a much different belief system that you and I have, they are actually an excellent example of consciousness in action. I mean, think about it. From the vision of a single individual, actually it was two individuals, William Booth and his wife Catherine, but in history the woman gets left out. That's just the way they do it, you know. From these two marvelous people who went out into the streets, their organization has grown to include a membership of 1.5 million people in 90 countries speaking 120 different languages. And they have transformed the lives of millions of people desperately in need of help who, for whatever reason, have not developed the consciousness to help themselves. And it's important to realize that they are successful because they're using the same principles that we teach. They are using the law of mind in action. Now, they don't call it that, but that's what they're doing. And they are doing it so well that our parent organization out in Boulder, Colorado, could probably learn a few things from them about vision and commitment and organization. So, if I admire this organization so much, you might wonder, then why would I entitle my talk this morning, Avoiding the Salvation Army? Okay? You see, one of the primary goals of the Salvation Army is contained in their name, and I don't mean the word army, that's pretty self-explanatory. I mean the S word, okay? The other part of their name, the one that makes some of us a little bit uncomfortable. So let's talk about that. For a number of different reasons, the word salvation has always been one of those religious buzzwords that sets off alarms in my head and probably with some of you. And in their case, in the Salvation Army, the use of the word salvation in their title means, as a part of their bylaws, they feel it is their obligation as military soldiers of God to save the souls of sinners who have wandered too far from God to find their way back on their own. Now, the actual Salvation Army, by which I will refer to as a capital S, capital A, okay, the people we see, have found a way to do this selflessly and effectively. And the people that they help the most are those who have gotten themselves so deep into crime and drugs and everything they probably would not have survived without some kind of loving assistance to slow down their self-destructive behavior. And if the way that's done is by playing music, giving them a hot meal, and reading them a little bit of the Bible, that's fine with me. You see, I don't have to avoid that Salvation Army because they're not interested in me. I'm not part of their clientele. But there is another Salvation Army, small s, small a, loose in the world, one that is more loosely organized but harder to avoid because they don't wear uniforms and they're less picky about whom they desire to save. These are people whose definition of salvation means making everyone else, including you and me, agree with what they believe about who and what God is, who and what we are, and how the two are supposed to interact. Okay? Now, these people come in many shapes and sizes and denominations, and they all believe very strongly that their belief is not only the right one, it's the only one. They believe in their heart that their particular way is God's true path, which, once again, is fine with me. If their belief system's working for them, I highly recommend they stick with it. The problem is, some of them, even with the best of intentions, don't know where to draw the line. Okay? They not only believe that they are right, but that everyone else is wrong. So they feel the need to convert everyone in the world so they can feel comfortable living in it. I'll tell you a little story. okay? One of our members, Michelle Henson, has been for a number of years a state representative for Georgia in Stone Mountain. And about 6 months ago, she put in a petition, and I was invited to come to the Georgia House of Representatives to be pastor for a day, to give the opening, a few words of wisdom, they said, and a prayer, an opening prayer. So I went in. They were very nice, very welcoming. I had my own parking place, all that stuff. And I went in, and after meeting the Speaker of the House, he took me up on the big platform, and it's a very elegant place with the dome and everything, if you haven't seen it. And I sat next to him, and he did the roll call, the electronic roll call of members, and then he invited me to talk. Well, I stood up, and everybody was sort of shuffling papers, doing it. We had like 200 people out there, the representatives, and the gallery was full, and all their constituents and assistants out there. And I started talking about things that sound very normal here. I talked about things like we need to love other people unconditionally and treat them decently regardless of their religion. I told them that I don't believe God has a religion. I started, and as I spoke, I saw heads popping up and turning. 5 minutes. I didn't talk long. And some people were poking somebody next to them and smiling and nodding their head. Some people were frowning, okay, all of it. And after it, I finished and I did a prayer, which is basically a treatment, which did not mention the Bible or Jesus in any way, shape, or form, okay? And so after that happened, they let everybody go to their committees. They released them. The speaker said, thank you, got my picture taken with him and Michelle. I got it at home. Then I went down to the side, and traditionally the minister waits there with their representative, and anybody who wants to can come up and say thank you, Pastor, and usually there's two or three people. So I had a line of 25 to 30 people lined up back there, and virtually every one of them as they went through was, thank you so much. We needed to hear that. It was wonderful. Until I got to the last guy. Who was a representative from Macon, Georgia, and he didn't put his hand out, and he said, that was very interesting, Pastor. Tell me, have you been saved? Right off the bat. Well, we had a little discussion, which he wasn't happy with, but I enjoyed immensely. Okay. and I won't go into it, you know. You know, unfortunately, this kind of closed-minded thinking, especially when it comes up against other closed-minded thinkers with different beliefs, has been the cause of wars and discrimination and religious persecution since before the beginning of recorded history, and it's still going on today. All right? Now, before we start nodding our heads too hard in righteous agreement, I've seen a few of you, okay? Let's all understand that this attitude of religious self-righteousness is not limited to differences between separate religions, not by a long shot. It also exists within religions, the holier than thou, I'm a better Catholic than you are, I'm a better Baptist, whatever it happens to be, including the Christian community, the Jewish community, the Muslim community, and the Hindu and the Buddhist communities, and even in the New Thought community of which we are a part. Now, it's really quite amazing. Virtually every major religion or belief system on the planet today claims to believe in one God, but whether or not they say it this way, most of them really don't believe that their God is the same God as everybody else's God. Okay? They don't. Or else they believe that it's the same God, but nobody understands him the way I do. All right? So with their head held high and in their most pious tone of voice, sounds like Kennedy, right? Channeling, okay. They try to convert people to their belief, whatever it happens to be, so that those other poor souls can have a better relationship with God, both here and in the hereafter. And the sad fact is, some people go so far as to believe that if you have to kill someone or to severely limit their freedom to save their soul, then that's the way it has to be. Now, salvation is an interesting concept. The word salvation comes from the word salvare, the Latin word, meaning to save. And saving in and of itself is a good thing. I mean, we save money, Okay, we save the trees, we save the whales, we save gas, we save stuff. That's what, you know, saving means. Saving someone has kind of a noble ring to it, okay? We are all impressed when we read a news story on the internet about someone who saves the life of another person. What do we call that person? We call them a hero, right? Okay? We call them brave. We call them selfless, all right? These are all character traits that everyone admires. But there is an army of people out there, okay, and it's certainly a divided army, who have taken this noble and perfectly legitimate idea of saving someone's life and warped it and extended it to mean saving someone's soul. Because really, today, to a lot of people, that's what the word salvation means. It means saving a soul for God, which is kind of weird because we don't think of a lifeguard as being the salvation of sinners, of swimmers, okay? A firefighter doesn't put out houses for the put out fires for the salvation of the house or the contents or the members, okay? Salvation has been turned into a strictly religious word with a very specific meaning. So to seek salvation for yourself or for another person now means to change a person in such a way that their thoughts and their behavior and their actions and their beliefs conform to some other person's or some religious institution's idea of how God, as they see God, wants us to behave. For example, the Roman Catholics, that was my background as a child, they believe from the letters of St. Paul that we can only be saved by doing good works. Then 1,500 years later, Martin Luther came along and he challenged that idea, saying salvation comes from faith alone, by which he meant faith in the Bible. Now, other teachings have their own specific ideas about what God wants. The Mormons certainly do, the Muslims, the Hindus, and it's all very confusing and can actually be a very serious concern for anyone who believes that making the wrong choice could send them to hell for a billion years or so, all right? Now, I know and you know that this is not an unfamiliar concept. Many of us here in this room, I know, we're intimately exposed to this kind of thinking when we were growing up. Some of us came into this kind of a teaching after being told for years that God had only given us one true way to achieve salvation. But what really confused most of us was, once we were old enough to think for ourselves, everyone seemed to be giving us their opinion of what the one true religion was, except God. Except God. Our parents were telling us, our friends were telling us, our minister or our rabbi or our priest was telling us, but none of what we heard seemed to agree with what our heart and our mind were telling us. Until one day, you may not remember when that day was, but I know it happened because you're here. One day we realized that that still small voice that kept speaking to us whenever we were quiet, no matter what the world outside was telling us, was really the voice of God speaking in, as, and through us. We realized that. And what that voice was saying, clearly and quietly, over and over and over again, was this. In our voice, we heard, I am a perfect creation of a perfect loving intelligence, and I do not need to be saved because I can never be lost. That's what that voice was saying. I know this because there has always been a wisdom inside of us that knows this simple truth, even though it took some of us years to finally start listening to it. But once we started listening to it and hearing it and knowing what it meant, we knew that we could never ignore it again. Never, ever. Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, for those who don't know, he was very aware of the conflict between what traditional religious teachings were telling us and what our inner wisdom already knew. That's why he defined his definition of salvation was getting back in harmony with God. Great term. Very, very simple. He writes this in The Science of Mind. He says, there is no salvation outside of conscious cooperation with the infinite. Conscious cooperation with the infinite. In other words, true salvation is not a place that we get to, like the ribbon at a finish line in a race. It's also not an award we get for chalking up a certain amount of attaboys during our 80 or 90 or 100 years on the planet. And it's not a win or lose, thumbs up or thumbs down from St. Peter as we show up at the pearly gates. That's not what it is. Salvation is a state of enlightened consciousness. That's all we need to know. And it comes when we learn to work in harmony with the law of life that is within us and around us all the time. And once we understand this, once we embody this, we can allow ourselves to live life in the present instead of worrying about some future judgment day that doesn't really exist. I know that many people, including some people in this room, spent a lot of years being told that they would be judged on the day they die based on what they did or didn't do when they were alive. Anybody hear that when you were growing up? Several of you, I have no doubt. And most of us who are in here got over that a long time ago. Okay, how many have gotten over it? If you haven't gotten over it, sweetheart, now's the time, okay? Good. But even if we don't believe it, you know, anymore, that old belief still affects us. It can still affect our thinking in subtle ways. You see, when we fall back into that old traditional idea of trying to keep God happy, or at least keeping God from being mad at us, which is sort of the same thing, okay, which we all do, all of us, okay, we are unnecessarily accepting as the truth in our life a number of semi-spiritual ideas that are not conducive to our good spiritual health or to good common sense. Thinking that way can cause us to waste our energy and our attention on things like guilt and shame and fear of God and self-criticism instead of living a life with joy and love and a passion for life. Let me explain it this way. Here's how these ideas affect our thinking. When someone is saved in the traditional religious sense of the word, they are usually saved from something, by something, or for something. There's the prepositions, from, by, or for. In the traditional view of salvation, held by most of the traditional churches, what we are saved from is the worst fate they could imagine, which is to be sent to hell for all eternity, condemned by and separated from the power that created us. But to me, that's not what I would call the logical behavior of a loving God, all right? And it's not an idea of God that appeals to me, which is why I am here instead of elsewhere on Peachtree Street up here, okay? In this teaching, we accept that we are all an integral part of an infinite creative power that does nothing but create life endlessly and lovingly. We can never be separated from it. We can never be destroyed by it because we are one with it. You get it? We are one with it. So spiritually, there's nothing to save us from. Now, then the old traditions tell us that what we are being saved by is the saving grace or the divine intervention of a merciful God, usually bestowed arbitrarily based on how well we follow whatever set of rules we were supposed to follow. And surprise, surprise, that doesn't work for me either, okay? In this teaching, we recognize that the gifts of life, by which I mean the gift of love, the gift of health, the gift of prosperity, the gift of choice, and all the other gifts, are always given to us in unlimited abundance, unlimited, with no strings attached. They are also given to us unconditionally, and they are given to everyone equally without exception. Without exception, all right? And it's up to us to recognize this truth and make use of it. All we need to know, all we really need to know, is that the gift of life can never be taken from us, and there's nothing we need to do to earn it. We have already got it. Finally, we were told in the past that what we are saved for is to sit around in a place called heaven with nothing else to do for the rest of eternity but worship God. Okay? Now, to me, that doesn't sound like something worth being saved for. Okay? I mean, why should I deprive myself in this life so I can do nothing but sit around on my tush in the next life with a bunch of boring religious fanatics? Okay? You see, we don't need to spend this life preparing for the next life because there is no next life. There's only one life, okay? And we are living it right now, and it goes on forever. It goes on forever. We will never be ever more alive or less alive than we are in this moment. And we can't earn extra credit today, so our life will be better after we die. Okay? It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. However, what we can do, as Dr. Holmes says, is to get in harmony with the power of life right here and right now. What we believe about ourselves and what we believe about life is what our life is going to become. That's what we teach. So what better time to start improving it than now? Now. We can start right now, right in this moment, right today, to demonstrate greater health, greater wealth, greater love, greater success, and everything else. And if we do it now, and we do it here, and we do it well, the future in this world or the afterworld is going to take care of itself. It's going to take care of itself. You see, something we have to realize is that the concept of salvation, eternal salvation, as pleasant as it may sound when spoken from a pulpit with the best of intentions, is based on fear. It is based on fear. It's based on the fear that God may be more interested in judging us than loving us. It's based on the fear that we can never really be as good as we're supposed to be, so we have to beg this all-powerful being to give us a break and not punish us too severely for our many weaknesses and shortcomings. And it's based on the fear that we are all hopeless sinners and we can never be anything better. That's the old teaching. But to Dr. Holmes, one of the reasons I love this man and love this teaching, all of those fears were spiritually demeaning. They were, because they were totally incompatible with the most basic concept of this teaching, which is that we are one with the divine power that created us and moves through us, okay? We are one. And if you are here, and I don't mean here in this room or here in Atlanta, I mean the big here, if you are present, you're a part of it. And you will never not be a part of it. Throughout history, David talks about the mystics a lot, Emma Curtis Hopkins, Meister Eckhart. The true spiritual mystics of every faith have always taught two things: the ultimate salvation of every person and the immortality of every soul. They have all taught, every mystic, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, whoever it was, those things. In other words, they taught that all of us are eventually going to get to wherever it is that we're all going. So nobody has to worry about being thrown out. No soul left behind, so to speak, okay? We don't have to worry about making the cut or making the team. Now, that's not what most religious doctrines teach, but it is what was taught by those men and women who learned to understand our true relationship with God. They understood that the way to achieve a union with the creative essence of life, which is really what heaven means, that's all heaven means, was not to beg for it, to suffer for it, or even to pray for it. They taught that salvation, in the deepest and most spiritual sense of the word, is not something difficult to be achieved. It is something already present that needs to be recognized and accepted. That's what they taught. It's not something to be accomplished by changing ourselves into something that we are not. It is the ability to know exactly what we are, which is a perfect idea in the mind of God. That is what we are. I mean, the truth is, God never has to decide whether or not we should be saved. And that's very surprising to some people, especially the guy in the back of the line in the Georgia House of Representatives, okay, these kind of people. God only knows us as spirits of infinite potential. That's how it created us. That's why it knows. God could no more make a decision about whether or not we should be saved than God could make a decision about whether or not we should be poor or sick or afraid. All right? To the infinite mind, these things are not even part of the equation, because it knows only good. It knows only the best about us and for us, which is why maybe we need to stop worrying about what God thinks of us and start paying attention to how we think about God. That's what we need to do. That is what's going to determine how our life goes. Once we understand all of this completely, and we accept it as the truth in our life all the time, we're not going to have to avoid anybody, okay? Not even the Salvation Army, little s, little a, the people that are out there. We won't have to worry about someone forcing their views on us, because we will be very clear about who we are, what we are, and where we are going. And when we think this way, when we get this totally embodied once again, we can allow others to follow their path because we will have found a path that's right for us. And like it or not, all paths lead to the same place because there is only one life, which means there is only one destination, and we're all heading for it, everybody on the planet. And I tell you this because this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Amen. 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 That's right. All right. Thank you. All right. I know I said a lot of things today that all of you already know, but I want to make sure you know what you know. Okay? And I want to make sure I know that you know what you know and that you know that I know. Okay, good. Now, let's take a moment and recognize that every single one of us is right where we need to be. Not just in this seat, in this room today, not just where we are physically, but where we are mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. This is not just true if we are clear and happy and joyful, feeling love from everyone around us, and feeling that our life is going beautifully. It is also true if we are going through the dark night of the soul. It is true for those of us who are dealing with issues, whether it's family or illness or relationship with our partner, our spouse, our children, our parents. It is especially true. We are never being punished. We are never being deprived. God, in the form of life, is giving to us endlessly all the time. So as we walk through the darkness, we realize that all we need to do is open our eyes, and we will see the light that is always there. As we see the light of love, the light of life, the light that is the glowing intelligence and loving presence of consciousness in its purest form everywhere, we begin to see that consciousness in every person, every place, and everything. We no longer judge, and as we no longer judge others, we no longer feel judged. We no longer criticize or gossip. We recognize that anger is something we choose, and that love is something that will always cast out fear. We recognize that we allow ourselves the courage to know who we are, what God is, and how life works. It empowers us. It allows us to create whatever we want to create, to be surrounded by love whenever we desire, to be present and listen even to those who we think are foolish, and realize that even in the fool there is wisdom. So as we recognize all of this, we know that what we have saved is our awareness. All we need to do is to save our greatest ideas, to save our most powerful and beautiful emotions, to save the love that we feel for every person. And as we save this and accumulate it, it expands until it consumes us. And it consumes us in a good way, because we then become the love and the idea and the joy that we are. This is our truth. We give thanks for this awareness. Thanks for being in this incredibly diverse world of people who agree and disagree, people who argue and fight, because that gives us an opportunity to recognize that peace is always potentially present. So we bring that peace, not by forcing it on others, but by expanding it within ourselves and bringing it wherever we go. This is the meaning of the holiday season, whatever our religion. This is the meaning of this time of year, the solstice, the darkness that will soon begin expanding into the great light of the summer. This is our truth. We accept it and we release it in consciousness, letting it be so. And so it is.